Chapter 16 Panda Palace. My original plan was to convince someone else to talk to Chloe, rather than me. After all, the last time I'd talked to Chloe, I'd been assaulted by a panda with a gun. Unfortunately, I couldn't find anyone from the FBI to do the job. By the time the school bus dropped me off at Fun Jungle, the feds had cleared out. The panda truck was still roped off as a crime scene, but there was no one around it, and the mobile crime unit was gone. If Molly O'Malley or any other agent was still up in the administration building, I had no way of finding out. I couldn't pass through security without an appointment, and no one was going to schedule one for me. If Summer had been there, she could have gotten me up. Maybe she could have even encouraged her father to pressure the FBI to talk to Chloe. But Summer had a horseback riding lesson scheduled after school, and her mother refused to let her skip it. Summer swore she would come by Fun Jungle as quickly as possible after her lesson, but I was on my own until then. I briefly considered going to Honecker, but I was sure that would be a waste of time. After all, the FBI had dismissed him from their investigation, and he'd never been a big fan of having to work with me. He'd only done it because JJ had ordered him to. If I asked him to talk to Chloe for me, he'd probably tell me to stick to my own business. So I went myself. Yes, it was a little reckless, but it seemed far less dangerous than many things I'd done while investigating before. I was merely heading to an empty exhibit to talk to a keeper, not swimming in the hippo tank or climbing onto the roof of World of Reptiles. Even so, I was cautious about it, keeping alert for anyone else suspicious as I headed over. My guess was that James Van Amberg, or whoever had threatened me, wouldn't be lurking around Panda Palace in a Li Ping costume anymore. But there was a good chance he, or someone else who worked for the bad guys, was still keeping an eye on the place. I yanked a baseball cap down over my eyes and fell in with large groups of people so I wouldn't look like I was a kid on my own. There were no crowds around Panda Palace. Everyone seemed to be avoiding the place, like it had bad karma. I slipped inside the exhibit. The interior continued the Chinese theme of the exterior, centered around some large bamboo gardens where Li Ping, and eventually the male panda, would be on display. It was beautiful, but without tourists or pandas, it was also echoey and sad, like an abandoned house. Chloe Dolcart was sitting inside the exhibit in one of the gardens reading a book. She had propped a folding chair by a little man-made creek and was sitting in the shade of a Chinese elm tree. It looked like a really lovely place to read, although I was quite sure she wasn't supposed to be sitting there at all, much less reading on company time. But then, she didn't have an actual panda to take care of. There was a large sheet of glass between me and Chloe. Despite the multiple "do not knock on glass" signs, I knocked on the glass. Startled, Chloe promptly toppled out of her chair and dropped her book in the creek. When she saw it was only me, she relaxed, then grabbed the book out of the water and pointed toward an employee access door to the right of the glass. I went over there and waited. The door, like every other employee access door at Fun Jungle, had a coded entry system with an electronic keypad. After a few seconds, Chloe opened it from the other side, glanced around to see if I was alone, then ushered me inside.
"Cripes, Daddy, you nearly gave me a heart attack."
"Sorry, I was only trying to get your attention." Chloe led me down a concrete hallway with windows that looked out onto the exhibit, trying to shake the water off her book the whole way.
"I know I'm not supposed to be in the exhibit like that," she said guiltily, "but I'm required to stay here while I'm on duty, and it's a lot nicer out there than it is in here."
She led me into her office. I could immediately see her point. The room was large but dark and cramped, as it seemed to be designed more for storing panda supplies than getting any work done. Save for a small desk, the room was mostly shelves. They were filled with plastic toys for Li Ping, as well as lots of canisters of food and sheaves of bamboo that were turning brown now that there was no panda to feed it to. On the plus side, though, the room smelled fantastic, much better than any other office at Fun Jungle, most of which reeked of musk and animal pee. I sniffed the air. "Is that cinnamon?"
"Yep."
Chloe pointed to a shelf where several restaurant-sized tubs of it were lined up.
"Li Ping loves it. Turns out, different pandas are into different smells. Some like honeysuckle, Some like wintergreen oil. There's one in San Diego who's into rubbing alcohol. The idea is, once Li Ping gets here, whenever we want to lure her out on display for the tourists, we can just sprinkle some cinnamon around the exhibit, and she'll run right out.
The mention of cinnamon jogged my memory a bit. I couldn't quite remember the whole conversation I'd had with Chloe the day before, but it seemed to me that she'd said something about food that was important. "So, pandas eat stuff besides bamboo?" I asked. Chloe answered my question with a question.
"Is this about Li Ping?"
"Kind of."
"Did you ever tell the FBI to talk to me?"
The question instantly confirmed that Molly hadn't bothered to send anyone by. I felt a flash of annoyance. Before I could really think about what I was doing, I lied and said, "Yes, and they sent me."
"Instead of an agent?"
"They're really busy, and they figured I knew you anyhow."
"And you've solved all those other crimes here,"
Chloe added, coming around to the idea.
"Plus, I'll bet you know more about animals than any of them do."
"Right," I said. "So, about the food?"
"Oh, right."
Chloe beamed, excited to be a part of the investigation.
"In the wild, pandas eat mostly bamboo. It's about 99% of their diet, but they occasionally also eat things like small rodents or musk deer fawns."
"Whoa," I said, "pandas eat meat?"
"Well, they're bears. Although here, we weren't really planning on feeding them meat. Most zoos don't. But we did intend to supplement their bamboo with other things."
Chloe pointed to more large canisters on the shelves.
"Sugarcane, rice, high-fiber biscuits, plus some more perishable stuff like yams and apples."
"Can pandas get by without any bamboo at all, then?"
"I suppose they could, but behaviorally, that probably wouldn't be the best idea. The concept behind all panda conservation is to eventually release pandas back into the wild. Probably not Li Ping herself, but maybe her offspring. So the pandas need to know how to forage in their natural habitat, and that means learning to eat bamboo. Lots of it. Most of a panda's waking life is spent eating. In the wild, they'll spend about 16 hours a day doing it. In captivity, we try to simulate that."
"And I guess their digestive tracts are designed for bamboo, too," I asked.
"Actually," Chloe replied, "they're not."
"Really?"
"Really. Like I said, the panda is a bear, so it has the digestive tract of a carnivore. Meanwhile, bamboo is a grass."
"It is?"
"The fastest growing grass on Earth. Some varieties can grow a few inches a day. Now, grass is hard enough to digest when an animal is designed for it, like a cow. They have really long digestive tracts with four stomachs to handle the job, and they regurgitate their cud to chew it repeatedly. But a panda doesn't have anything like that. Its digestive tract is short, like ours, so it barely gets any nutrients at all from the bamboo. That's why they have to eat so much of it."
Our conversation from the day before came back to me. "Right. Yesterday you said they have to eat 25 pounds a day."
"More than 25, Chloe corrected. "A big male can eat up to 40 pounds of bamboo a day, but the average is around 30.
Something clicked in my mind. I suddenly realized what the important thing I needed to know about pandas was. "So if they eat that much bamboo and they can't digest it well, how much do they go to the bathroom?"
"Constantly," Chloe said. "They'll poop 40 times a day. Food goes straight through them. Feed one an apple, and it'll be out the other end in 15 minutes. The bamboo takes a bit longer, though. It's not unusual for them to produce 50 pounds of poop in a day."
"But that's even more weight than they take in," I pointed out.
"Exactly. The water they drink combines with the food in their digestive tracts. It comes out in these big old nuggets about the size and shape of an avocado."
"Holy cow."
"You mean, holy something else," Chloe said. "Everyone else at Fun Jungle thinks this is going to be a big glamour job. Like, I'm just going to sit here and pet the pandas all day. But they're a lot of work. They're tough to feed. They're nearly impossible to breed. And man, that's a lot of poop to clean up every day."
"Still a lot less than the elephants," I thought. But I didn't say it. As it was, my mind was racing with other ideas. I'd found out what I needed to know from Chloe, and it changed everything about the investigation. I needed to get in touch with the FBI right away. "Well, thanks for your time," I said, edging toward the door. Unfortunately, Chloe seemed desperate to talk. She'd been forgotten in all the chaos about the panda. A large part of her job was supposed to be talking to guests about the pandas. But she hadn't had a chance to do it yet. So I was her test audience.
"Want to know something else amazing about pandas?" she asked. "Their jaw muscles are massive. It comes from all that bamboo chewing. That's why their faces look so round, which is part of the reason they look so cute to us. Human baby faces are round, too."
"Fascinating," I said. "Sorry, but I really have to go."
"Or did you know that a panda is only the size of a stick of butter when it's born? And it only weighs 3 to 5 ounces. That's 1/900th the weight of its mother."
Normally, I would have loved to hear more panda facts, but time was of the essence, and I was desperate. I pulled out my phone, pretending a text had come in, and faked reading it. "Oh, man," I gasped. "This is from the FBI. I have to report back to them right away."
"Ooh," Chloe exclaimed. "Has there been a break in the case?"
"I think so. Thanks for all your help."
"Happy to give it. And if you want to come back to hear some more, feel free. I'm here all day. By myself. With nothing else to do."
She looked so sad, I almost stuck around for a few additional panda facts. But I couldn't. Because if I was right about what I was thinking, then the FBI was making a huge mistake in their investigation. "I'll come back soon," I told her, then ducked out of the office, wound my way back through Panda Palace, and hurried across Fun Jungle. As I did, I quickly dialed Summer on my phone. She picked up on the second ring.
"Hey, what's up?"
"I learned something important about the panda case. I need to talk to the FBI right away."
"It might be too late for that. They're arresting Carlos Gomez right now."
"What?"
"It's all over the news. Where have you been?"
"Investigating. And the FBI is wrong. I don't think the NFF had anything to do with this."
Summer said something else, but I couldn't make it out. I was crossing the dead zone for cell service at Fun Jungle.
"Hold on, I can't hear you," I said. There was a lot of static on the line, and then I caught a faint bit of Summer's voice.
"I can barely hear you either. You're..."
I stopped and backed up a few feet, where the reception had been merely lousy rather than horrible.
"Summer? Hello?" "Getting to Fun Jungle right now," she said.
"Meet you at Polar Pavilion?" I repeated.
There was something that sounded vaguely like, "Yes," followed by one last snippet of conversation.
"Too hot outside."
After that, the call dropped.
I took off for Polar Pavilion. Summer was right. It was way too hot outside. Even hotter than the day before. I hadn't run far before I'd sweated right through my shirt. I was almost at Polar Pavilion when I heard someone shout my name.
"Teddy!"
There was a screech of tires to my left, followed by the scream of some tourists and a thump. I turned to see Marge O'Malley at the wheel of her golf cart. She was back on the job and causing trouble as usual. She appeared to have slammed into a tourist and knocked the poor fellow into the landscaping. His pale legs waved in the air while the rest of him was buried headfirst in a shrubbery.
"Why don't you watch where you're going?"
Marge snapped at him, then returned her attention to me.
"Teddy! Wait right there. I need to talk to you."
I kept on running. The last thing I needed at the moment was Marge trying to horn in on my investigation. She wouldn't be any help at all, and she was probably the only person at Fun Jungle who Molly O'Malley wanted to hear from less than me. Luckily, Marge couldn't follow me right away. She still had to help the tourists she'd bowled over, so she kept bellowing at me as though that might work.
"Teddy! Teddy! Teddy!"
I pretended like I didn't hear her, which Marge must have known was an act. She was so loud people in the parking lot had probably heard her. The next time she saw me, she'd definitely be angry with me. But at the moment, that was a relatively minor problem. I shoved through the doors into the Polar Pavilion. The Arctic air hit me like a slap in the face. Now that I was so sweaty, it was actually a bit too cold in the exhibit. It felt as though all the water on my body had instantly turned to ice. Much of it in very uncomfortable places, like my armpits and my underwear. I glanced around for Summer but didn't see her. It was feeding time for the penguins, so almost all the guests were crowded around that tank,
rather than the polar bears. In fact, the polar bear viewing was about as empty as I'd ever seen it. The bears themselves weren't putting on much of a show. They were merely lying on the ice, half asleep, so even the few tourists in the area were migrating toward the penguins. If Summer wanted to meet me, I figured she wouldn't be in the crowds. She'd be out where I could see her. Only, given that I hadn't heard much of her call, I had no idea what she even thought her ETA at Polar Pavilion would be. I fished my phone out to see if she'd texted me more information. As I did, I suddenly became aware of one other person in the pavilion. Someone was coming up behind me very quickly. The thud of his feet on the floor gave me the uneasy sense of trouble approaching. I spun around to face him, or at least I tried. Before I could, whoever it was grabbed me from behind and hoisted me into the air. Then, he threw me over the railing into the polar bear exhibit.